Es ist bis zum letzten Tag stressig.
Hallo und noch einmal herzlich willkommen bei unserer letzten Folge unseres Kongressjournals aus Alpbach.
Mein Name ist Eva Winreuter.
Und ich bin Anna Wallner. Ja, stressig war es bei uns in der Audioredaktion ehrlicherweise in den vergangenen gut 2 Wochen schon auch, aber vor allem sehr unterhaltsam und lehrreich.
Presse Play. Was in Alpbach wichtig ist. Der Pressepodcast aus Alpbach wird unterstützt von der Erste Group.
Unsere letzte Folge dreht sich um die großen Erkenntnisse, die die Teilnehmerinnen und Teilnehmer des Forums in den vergangenen 2 Wochen gewonnen haben. Wir haben sie gefragt, was war gut, was war nicht so gut und vor allem, was hat sie wirklich inspiriert? Aber hören Sie doch selbst.
Meine größte Erkenntnis in Alpbach war, dass wirklich die Leute im Vordergrund stehen. Also Leute kennenzulernen, sich mit denen auszutauschen, ist wirklich sehr einfach.
Dass man beim Reden extrem gut zum Reden kommt.
Für mich war es wieder eine Erinnerung daran, wenn Menschen zusammenkommen, dass es eine Art von Muttankstelle sein kann. Und vor allem, ja, es ist einfach ganz wichtig, dass wir zusammenkommen.
Ich bin so ein bisschen ein Alpbach-Nerd, ich mag's, ja. Und ich mag auch diese inhaltlich betonte Ausrichtung sehr gut und trotzdem kommt das Networking nicht so kurz. Mir gefällt die Ausrichtung sehr gut.
Ein großes Industrieunternehmen hat erkannt, dass es tatsächlich auch im Sinne des Klimaschutzes aktiv werden kann.
Dass es extrem viel Arbeit braucht, mentale Modelle und Glaubenssätze aufzubrechen und immer wieder sehr viel Energie darüber nachzudenken, ob man gerade wieder in ein mentales Modell verfallen ist.
Dass Alpbach wirklich das ist, was man selber daraus macht. Und das kann ein Versprechen, aber auch eine Drohung sein.
Ja, und manche Dinge sind natürlich immer noch verbesserungswürdig, wie man uns erzählt hat.
Nächstes Jahr brauchen wir mehr Leute im Awareness-Team, weil doch recht viele Sachen vorgefallen sind.
Wenn man Jugendpartizipation propagiert, muss man Jugendpartizipation auch lieben. In einem Fall war ich in einer Diskussion, wo die Moderatorin leider den jungen Menschen weniger zugehört hat als den Professorinnen.
Und manchmal geht es einfach auch um das Drumherum.
Networking in Österreich ist überraschend alkohollastig.
Dass auch in Alpbach schönes Wetter sein kann.
Tatsächlich, das Wetter war dann pünktlich zum Ende des Forums, nach tagelangem Dauerregen, wieder schön. Jetzt haben wir gerade viel Positives gehört, aber es gab natürlich auch dieses Jahr Kritik und einige Nörgler. Menschen also, die meinen, es sei jetzt definitiv das letzte Mal, dass sie zum Forum Alpbach kommen, weil man hier nun zum Beispiel zu wenig Geschäftspartner treffe. Und dann gibt's auch die anderen, die über die Organisation maulen und sich laut ärgern, dass frühere Veranstalter von Side-Events diesmal nicht mehr dabei sind oder unschön ausgeladen worden seien. Interessanterweise wollte uns diese Kritik aber niemand on air oder ins Mikro sagen. Dafür habe ich zum Schluss noch eine Journalistenkollegin zum Austausch getroffen. Susan Lynch war diesen Sommer das erste Mal in Alpbach, erzählt sie. Sie ist Chief Brussels Correspondent für Politico und außerdem Gastgeberin des EU Confidential Podcasts. Sie fährt schon wieder zurück nach Brüssel, aber vorher wollte ich von ihr noch wissen, welche Erwartungen sie an den politischen Herbst in der europäischen Hauptstadt hat.
Yes, I mean, there's a really a sense that we're in the final stretch of the current European Commission. We've only got, 9 months or so left in the 5-year mandate of the Commission under Ursula von der Leyen. So until we have the elections next summer for the European Parliament. So there's a real sense now wondering what's going to be prioritised. They've limited time. What's going to be top of the agenda? I think one of the huge issues that's going to dominate discussion over the next few months is the issue of enlargement. Already this week, we saw 2 very important speeches, one by Charles Michel, the president of the European Council at BLED, about enlargement, saying that he expects the EU to enlarge and have a new member by 2030. And we also had a speech by Emmanuel Macron, the French president, on Monday also, where he spoke about, the future of Europe and the idea of a 2-tier, 2-speed Europe as well. So I think for a long time in Europe, the reality is that enlargement fatigue had set in. I think a lot of countries felt that after the last big wave of accession, Europe had expanded enough. But I think the invasion, the full-scale invasion of Ukraine by Russia, has changed that debate. And I think the EU feels that not just for Ukraine, but for other countries, for example, in the Western Balkans, it's time to re-engage with the idea of EU enlargement.
Mm. Now, we had this opening speech of Andreas Treichel, the president of Alpbach, where he pointed out how that Europe is not bold enough anymore, and that it's getting a bit lazy. Is that something that you agree on?
Yeah, I mean, there's a truism in EU politics that Europe only moves forward when it has a crisis. And I think that was the case in the Eurozone crisis, various other times in its history. And now I think that war on the continent has helped focus minds and brought forward the need for Europe to act. I think there's a sense that Europe wasn't bold enough when it came to, for example, enlargement. And the reality is geography you can't change. And if Europe doesn't want to engage with its nearest neighbours, places like Ukraine, Belarus, the Western Balkans, someone else will. And I think there is an acceptance now that, you know, Europe ignores these countries at its peril, really. So the fact that, you know, Russia, for example, has increased its presence in some, not all, of the Western Balkan countries, I think is a concern. And I think there's been a wake-up call for Europe. So I think on the issue of enlargement, this would be a bold move for Europe to expand. It's one of the biggest things the EU can do and, you know, allow a new member to join. So this conversation is going to be a difficult one. Not all countries agree on this. There are going to be very, very different views around the EU table. So I think this is just the start of the debate on this.
Ja, also wie gesagt, die Europawahlen stehen im Mai 2024 an. Aber was genau heißt denn das für das Brüsseler Medium Politico?
Well, I think the elections are going to be a big focus. And there are two elements of this. There are the European Parliament elections that take place next summer and the election of MEPs across Europe. So that's one part. And we will be covering that and looking at who's running, who's not running, the candidates, etc., in the run-up to that election. However, the other part of this is the fact that the top EU jobs are dependent on how the elections go. They're all bound up together. So after the elections, we're going to be having a reshuffle of sorts. So there's going to be a big conversation about who gets the top jobs in Europe, who is going to be Commission President, who is going to be the Council President. Bound up to this, there's going to be a lot of speculation about the future of Ursula von der Leyen, the European Commission President. She's coming to the end of her first five-year term. I think it's widely accepted that if she wants to run again, she will have the support by most countries, frankly, and also the German government, even though the parties in government are not her own party. They were, obviously, when she was appointed under Angela Merkel, but now there are different parties in power in Berlin. But they even have, you know, they want a German in that position, even if it's not in their own party. But if she doesn't want to run again, I mean, then you're into a whole big, you know, conversation, debate, battle for who is going to get that job. And then there is going to be a debate about the Spitzenkandidaten process. That term, I have to say, I'm not a fan of that term. It's quite confusing. But the idea that candidates will have to run and the candidate who gets the most votes in the European Parliament election, the group, then has a stake in the European Commission job. That didn't really work the last time. Let's see. There's going to be a lot of debate about whether that will happen this time. But those kind of political stories, I think, are going to be a big focus for us.
Und was nimmt Susan Lynch nun von ihrer Premiere beim Forum Alpbach mit? Vor allem auch als eine, die schon sehr oft das Weltwirtschaftsforum in Davos besucht hat und somit einen Vergleich ziehen kann.
Well, I have to say, and this is not, I know there's a lot of talk about intergenerational interaction, which I think is really important, really good. But I actually personally can't get over the gender makeup. I go to conferences a lot. I mean, I go to Davos every year. It's completely male dominated. Here, every panel I chaired, I was on one panel with all women, including myself. And I joked with Minister Schellenberg, the Austrian foreign minister, that he was the token man on one of the panels because he was the only man. It was all women. So that really struck me, actually. And I learned that afterwards, they have been trying to work on that. So I thought that was, you know, people take that for granted. But I can tell you now that does not happen. That's never happened to me before in my professional career where I've been on an all-women panel. So that's one of my takeaways.
Okay. If someone will ask you back home in Brussels or wherever, what would you tell them about this little tiny Tyrolean village and this conference?
I think it's been a really interesting. I think the variety of topics actually has been very interesting. I've been involved in the Europe and the World Days bit, so I'd be very focused on that. But as I've been here, I realise, oh, there are all these other aspects. So, for example, today, Pascal Donoghue is the head of the Eurogroup, who's, I'm from Ireland myself, he's the Irish finance minister. I would have interviewed him over the years. I realised he's coming, I'm missing him. But there's, you know, Joe Stiglitz, I saw walking around the streets. I was like, oh, kind of a celebrity spot of Joe Stiglitz. So if I was here again, I'd probably tune more into all the wide variety of issues, like the economic conversation is very important. And so I think that's one of the definitive features, that you have this wide range of subjects, of topics, everything from climate change to finance, you know, all those things. And I think that's one of the strengths of this forum.
And as you mentioned Davos before, what is the biggest difference, despite the fact that there are obviously more female speakers than in Davos?
I suppose this does remind me of Davos. It's like a smaller version of it. I mean, you're all, obviously in this mountainous setting, which is quite reminiscent of Davos. But I think the town is prettier, dare I say, than the town of Davos. So it's just like, it feels like that on a smaller scale. But definitely the age profile is different. You have a lot younger, but not, you know, not very young people, but kind of people in their 20s, early 30s. You know, that doesn't happen at Davos. Now, that could be because a lot of the people at Davos are like C-suite, chief executive. So obviously, you know, most people are going to be that bit older at that level. So maybe that is something to do with it. But I mean, the setting is charming. I think the minister made the point as well that it's quite difficult to get to, I have to say. But he said that's kind of the point, that you get here, it's an effort to get here, and then you're able to kind of tune out and be in this very, very different world. So I have to say, Brussels feels like a long way away now, and all the technical bureaucratic talk and speak that I'm going to have to face back into this week when I'm back in Brussels. It's been a nice kind of intellectual time out, and kind of a way to engage in some of the big debates that are happening at the moment.
Okay, and last question, is there something that you missed
here at the forum? I did miss, I mean, Joseph Stiglitz, for example. I'm a bit of a fan of him as an economist, and I kind of missed that when he was speaking. So I kind of missed out on that one. So I definitely probably would be a bit more organised next year and try and, you know, identify exactly what panels I want to go to. Although I have to say, one of the aspects of this is that you should, and I did kind of wander into things, and that I happened yesterday, I went to something and then I was in the wrong place, and then I ended up bumping into someone else and had a good chat. So that kind of thing, that's half the challenge here, is just to be out walking around, you bump into people, and sometimes that's more rewarding in a sense than just going to something that you think you're interested in. Whereas in fact, if you end up at a panel where you're out of your comfort zone a bit, that can be more rewarding.
Alexander Schallenberg war da in diesem Jahr also der einzige Mann auf einem Panel. Das hat er vermutlich auch noch nicht oft erlebt, aber es dürfte ihm gefallen haben. Ja, und dieser relativ hohe Frauenanteil unter den Speakern am Forum ist auch ein Punkt, der nicht nur vielen positiv aufgefallen ist, sondern als echter Pluspunkt gesehen wird. Es waren insgesamt 53% der Speaker weiblich. Nur ein paar wenige Gäste sagen sogar, da geht in Zukunft noch mehr. Auch dass das Forum internationaler geworden ist, freut viele. Das könnte man sogar ausbauen, findet etwa ÖVP-Finanzminister Magnus Brunner, der übrigens auch im Presse-Live-Podcast zu Gast war.
Es wird immer, immer internationaler und europäischer. Und meine Erkenntnis von diesem Jahr ist, auch weil ich internationale Gäste mitgebracht habe nach Alpbach, dass man noch mehr und intensiver erstens einmal die europäische Komponente diskutieren sollte, einbringen sollte auch. Und gerade weil so viele junge Menschen da sind, interessierte junge Menschen, dass man das mehr in die Breite bringen sollte.
Alles in allem war das also für viele offenbar ein wirklich gelungenes Forum, das vor allem jene überzeugt hat, die im ersten Moment einmal kurz gezögert haben. So wie Gerhard Hofer, stellvertretender Chefredakteur der Presse.
Ja, die größte Erkenntnis war, dass es sich wie jedes Jahr doch ausgezahlt hat, hierher zu kommen, obwohl ich vielleicht am Anfang ein bisschen skeptisch war.
Das war tatsächlich schon die 10. und damit letzte Folge unseres Kongressjournals aus Alpbach. Wir hoffen, es hat Ihnen gefallen. Uns hat es auch in diesem Jahr und in der 4. Auflage wieder sehr viel Spaß gemacht. Und Sie können alle Folgen auch noch nachhören, gebündelt unter diepresse.com/alpbach und überall, wo es Podcasts gibt. Zur Erinnerung, dieser Podcast hat ein grünes Logo und heißt, was in Alpbach wichtig ist. Und wenn Sie gemocht haben, was wir Ihnen hier geliefert haben, dann empfehlen wir Ihnen auch einmal in eine unserer anderen Podcast-Formate hineinzuhören. Zum Beispiel in den Musiksalon oder in Klassik für Taktlose oder in den Finanzpodcast Mein Geld
oder in den täglichen Podcast Was wichtig wird. Der erscheint immer von Dienstag bis Freitag morgens um 6 Uhr. Alle unsere Podcasts gebündelt finden Sie in unserer App oder auf unserer Webseite unter diepresse.com/podcast. Mach's gut, Alpbach. Wir fahren dann mal heim, kommen auch Sie gut nach Hause und haben Sie einen guten Start in den Herbst. Wir hoffen, Sie hören uns bald wieder.
Presse Play. Was in Alpbach wichtig ist.